Hello, everybody. Chris Martinson here. And today we're going to be talking about finance and economics as part of Finance U. Remember, anything that you see in this video and all resources available at our websites or affiliated websites are not intended as or construed as financial advice. This is for educational purposes. Remember, if you have a financial decision, please consult a financial professional. We are not attorneys. We're not CPAs. We are not financial managers. As well, we do our best to be accurate, and everything we represent is as accurate as we know it to be. Now, let's turn to our program. Hello, everyone. Chris Martinson of Peak Prosperity and Peak Financial Investing here, back with Paul Kiker of Kiker Wealth Management for 2024. Wow, Paul, it's a whole new year. A lot of people have been viewing this year with anxiety. Let's talk about 2024 coming forward. Good to see you again. And by the way, Happy New Year.
Good to see you again, and Happy New Year as well. So looking forward to 2024. Four, I would say we're going to be living in interesting times.
Let's be nimble. Let's be quick, right?
Yes.
Let's jump over the candlestick. So I am rocking a little bit of a cold. So if every so often you see me reaching for a tissue, it happens. It's a cold. It's what we used to call a cold. It's very ordinary. It's amazing how many people still, Paul, have deep fear because of the fear propaganda industry that really pushed forward this whole idea that there's a lot to be afraid about. And it was very bizarre how that all came out. And I feel bad for people who are still living in fear around all of that. Cause you gotta listen, this is life. Life is risky. You gotta carry on. You gotta live your life, be your best self, all of that. And I do think some people have been, their lives have been diminished by this dread over a cold.
Absolutely. And yeah. It is sad. So if I say, huh, once or twice, my cold has gotten my left ear stopped up 100%. So I'm listening really hard, kind of like that.
Yeah. I know the feeling. Like right now, I don't want to bend over because this will just usual stuff. So, hey, as we look forward, though, I know you've been meeting with a lot of clients. Oops, sorry. Lost my earpiece. So speaking of ears. You've been meeting with a lot of clients, and I'm just wondering, like, what are people coming to you? What are their concerns? If you could categorize them, you know, just sort of like what's sort of on people's minds from your perspective as they think about developing plans for the coming times?
Well, you know, the interesting part is, and I think it has a lot to do with our industry, a lot of the individuals that come to begin with just have extreme concerns, you know, because you've done such a phenomenal job of educating them on what's taking place. They're listening to that. They're opening their eyes. They're starting to embrace the courage of the truth of the situation that we're in. So they're looking for an answer to kind of help solve, okay, what do I do with the resources that I have? And so there's just a lot of concern about the future. People are wanting to make sure, I would say 90% just want to be prudent and manage the resources that they have wisely to help themselves get through. And then others are like, hey, you know, how do we turn this into opportunity? So it's been really good conversations. One of the things that we do, which people are understanding, and it's amazing. I love the feedback that I get with people because they're like, wow, the plan really did, or the analysis of your situation really did open my eyes to see where we are and what our risks are. So every now and then I have, you know, one of the things that we'll do when somebody comes in is we have an initial consultation, you know, meet and greet, ask me any question that you want to ask me. And that's one thing I tell people to begin with is, look, I've been in this business for 25 years. You're not going to hurt my feelings. If you have a question, ask it. So we have good conversations in the initial call. And then we move to the planning process where I do a retirement plan analysis, because that's what we save for. That's what we sacrifice today. We don't know what point in the future where we may not be able to work. So we've got to be prepared for that. And hopefully we choose to, you know, the time of which we're able to retire. So there are a few individuals that I kind of have to really coach and say, look, this is very important for me to go through so that I can show you your risks to success, show you where you are, and help you develop a plan on making wise decisions. And there have been a few people that I've had to, you know, dramatically change their outlook as far as what their expectations were.
Because of inflation rates, or what was driving that?
Well, both. So it's been a little bit of everything. So inflation rate is probably the one thing that just really unfortunately opens kind of it does bring a little fear. Because when you stress test someone's retirement income against sustained higher inflation or potential hyperinflation, let's say 5.5% compounded or 7.5% compounded, and then you show them how they have to change their investment allocation to adapt for that, there's a lot of fear that comes along. So from that standpoint, I've had a lot of individuals that are like, "Hey, I've got enough assets. I'm not worried about inflation. I'll be able to survive it just fine." And then when I talk them through the situation and show them what that will actually do if it's sustained, it is an eye-opening conversation.
Well,
And
we just had the data come out this morning. I read, and I might have the number slightly wrong, but macro, it's correct. They said that the average family now, compared to 2020, has to spend $11,700 more just to buy the same stuff today. So
so
they're
I did not hear that data, but that does not surprise me. And what's the median household income in the United States now? I don't have that number in front of me, but I know it's what's 68 to 72,000. That's nearly a 20% increase in their cost of living. 15% for sure. Most people can't absorb that. So yeah, I mean that's
But if you were retired back then, I mean, it's that hits you, right? And often retired people actually have somewhat more exposure if they live in a city
yes.
and they're consume and they need to pay for drugs or medicines, et cetera. Or you live in New Jersey and your property taxes,
Well,
et cetera.
I'll tell you one thing that's interesting. So in the local area, I've been here for 25 years, and I have surges of individuals that have been retired for quite some time and did not prepare for inflation that will come in. But I've had an absolute flood of new consultations with people in the local area that are coming in saying, "Hey, I've been scared of the market. I've been in CDs forever. I haven't had any precious metals, and I'm absolutely, even though interest rates have gone up, they've not gone up enough to offset my cost of living go up. What can I do?" So I'm seeing that in retirees specifically, those in their late 70s, early 80s, because they just didn't have anybody to warn them, and they didn't have anybody to sit down and meet with to help them develop a plan and do some analysis like we've been doing. So, but those numbers are relatively large. But the next thing we've been able to do is, I have had a couple of people that have come in and their expectations have been a little too high, right? So they're like, "Hey, I'd like to have X amount of income." And I've got a pretty good idea when I first look at their situation that's unsustainable. And I'll kind of have that conversation with them, but then I'll set them back to the plan. And then we show them the stress test throughout history. And I say, "Okay, if you take, X amount of dollars per month," I'll just pick a round number, say it's $10,000 a month, "then there's no historical period that you would have survived a 3.5% inflation rate with the assets that you have, much less, a 7.5% sustained inflation." So what I'm able to take them through is I'll say, "Okay, here's your options. You can work another 5 years, 7 years. You can reduce your income, or you can increase your savings now." For some of these individuals, we may have two or three meetings just to go through so they can process that. But every one of them, when they get to the end of it, they're like, "Hey, thank you for this. My expectations were unrealistic. I didn't realize it. Nobody's told me this before. Now what do we do?" And that's when we get into the investment recommendation, and here's how you deal with it. So when we get finished with someone, I'm a big believer, Chris, in the investment process. We don't necessarily need to carry any more risk than we have to be successful. So when we get done with the plan, I say, "Okay, as long as inflation is sustained here or less, this is the allocation that you can have to be successful. If inflation is above this, then we need to change to this allocation. We change to this allocation." And my most fun part, my most enjoyable part, is once we get that done, then I fall back to the planning. "Okay, let's take a portion of your assets now and let's prepare for your insurance policies for worst case scenario," right? This is where, I mean, my recommendation is your recommendations. You've got to have some physical gold that you have on hand. So let's take this bucket and let's set this over here. Let's take some cash and keep it on hand in case we have a deflationary event. Let's reduce some debt on your primary residence. Let's beef up the food that you have on hand. And it's enjoyable to me because once you get through that, not only helping people understand how to manage their money in a way to survive and adapt, right? Because if they kick this can down the road another 2 years, we have to invest a little bit differently than we do if it comes apart 3 months from now. And we're never going to be able to pick the top, but we have tools that'll help us, sidestep those major declines. So it's fun to me to be able to put a working process in place to help them manage their money prudently. We've got a roadmap in place so that they know the truth of their situation, what they can control, what they can't control, and then be able to go through and help them build resiliency in with their assets as well. So I love it. I enjoy meeting the people. From the feedback we're getting, people are just really appreciative of what we're doing for them, and they're some of the greatest, smartest, nicest, just really truthful, courageous people that I've met in the 25 years of doing this. So
Now
your
we've all
tribe is
got, oh, I thank you and welcome to being part of the tribe, and thank you for helping them, because I love I they are there's so many good people out there, and I do believe the good people will rise again. As you and I were talking about before we hit the record button, there's a lot of less than savory characters out there who are now in positions of power. And I don't know if you saw it, but I ran it over the holiday week where I interviewed Grant Williams, one of my favorite people,
Yes.
and with his gentle British accent, but his position, he always makes me think, because I'm like, are these people intentionally trying to wreck things? And he took the other side and said, no, they're midwits. They know not what they do. And so, I don't think you could sit down with a single Federal Reserve official and walk them through this and say, would it be a good idea roast an entire younger generation? Aren't they our future prosperity? But you've made household formation almost an impossible task for a lot of these folks. And oh, did you notice that when you're here propping up the stock markets and doing all of that, that 92.5% of all stocks are now owned by the top 10% of households? So what's your plan for the other 90%? Because that's actually where our prosperity comes from,
That's right.
is a big, broad, stable middle class doing all the things not related to moving pieces of paper and digits around in Wall Street, but the people who plumb the houses and farm the fields and maintain the bridges and make sure that the elderly are cared for and do all of the innumerable things, they're getting slowly crushed here, right? Is that really your plan? Now, I think they would all probably go, no, that's not actually the plan, but it seems to be how it's working out because they're midwits. They've lost the ability to connect A and B and see how cause and effect actually come together. They're doing what they've grown up in the system, the same system that in a fractal way couldn't detect that maybe, possibly, having your president of your university be a known plagiarist was kind of bad for your image, bad for the mission, bad for the overall arc of who you are as an entity, that we're watching all these entities just run by midwits. But it all that makes sense to the somehow it makes sense to them. But we have to act as if they don't actually know what they're doing,
Right.
and they might actually drive this into a ditch. Can I show you something real quick?
Please do.
So I put this up on Twitter on New Year's Day, January 1st, and I just said, hey, I've just have this one outstanding question, right? And so this is the old chart. I show this all the time. We got GDP on the bottom, and then that exponential curvy thing on top, that's total credit market debt in the US, not underfunded liabilities. This isn't Medicare that we don't know how we're going to pay for. This is just debt. And so we have a system that everybody who's alive in the Federal Reserve making their decisions, they grew up, became adults, formed their opinions about how the world works during this chart. And then I very helpfully extrapolated it. That's the rest of it. Like, it doesn't actually go up that high. The edge of the chart, if you can see it. I don't know if it's possible to see, but the edge of the chart here is where the data stops. But I just said, well, it's been this trend for 50 years. Maybe it continues. But nobody can answer the question. This is why I want to set that hypothetical Federal Reserve official down and ask the question, which is, how does this resolve? How do we keep this? Do we just do this until it breaks? Do aliens come down and teach us how to like make our economy magically grow fatties and catch up? Like, what is the plan?
I don't know. I don't know that they necessarily have a plan, because I've considered that question for quite some time as well. And then I'll go back and I look historically and I say, okay, well, we're reaching new debt level highs, but then you look at the percentages of GDP increase versus the debt increase, and they're moving in closer tandem than where they are right now. So I don't know. Sometimes I wonder if they're so focused on right now and they're so short term in their thought process that they just don't have the courage to look up in the future, or maybe it's the political cycle. I don't know, but they're certainly not strong enough to make the decisions that we need to make to break the path that we're on.
Well, so this is where it's important because you mentioned something before. This is absolutely how I'm positioned in my portfolio is mostly for inflation, but also in case deflation happens. Now, deflation is something that they desperately want to avoid because I think they're worried that that will sort of become uncontained and become a wildfire that jumps to the crowns and you can't control it and it burns itself out. And when it's done, we've lost half of our financial industry and, wreckage, right? So they're very scared of that. So they will always lean more heavily towards inflation given the chance, right? But that chart I just showed shows this is becoming a more and more of a knife edge because you have less buffer in the system to make a mistake when you're at these stratospheric levels. So we all have to trust that the Federal Reserve knows they can control all the knobs and dials and all this. But if they lose control, right now I would submit to you that they are losing control. And if just taking it at face value, and I don't anymore, but let's take it at face value. Right now, stocks are at all-time highs or darn close.
Just barely
And
above.
somehow powering higher in the intermarket day, like they just magically vault higher and all of that, and oil is going down. Paul, is this a chance that we're facing the dreaded stagflation, which is a very kind term for a brutal period of time where the economy is not really growing? And it's not. Once, like they said, oh, the economy grew 4.8, we think now in the fourth quarter. That's the early read looking at FedNow. But the government expanded. Has a 6.5% GDP deficit. So if you took government spending out, we're actually in a recession. And I submit to you the government spending is not legit economic growth because it is fundamentally wasteful in most ways, or neutral at best, wasteful at worst. It doesn't actually stimulate new productivity and more economic growth. So stagflation would be flat to declining economy, but inflation still carrying on, which is brutal for that 90% we were just talking about. Bad situation.
Because their wages aren't going to keep up with a stagflationary economy where things are declining. There's not going to be all of these job openings. People are going to, and the employees are not going to have pricing power without risking walking away from their job in pure protest. But if you've got a weak economy, there's going to be somebody else that's desperate enough to come in and take that position. So that's the worst situation that could happen for the bottom 90%, the average.
Well, again, midwits versus intentional, but I have to talk about this because we just had the data came up that 300,000 illegal aliens were allowed across the border. Not just allowed, but encouraged, right? Where we have reports now that they're getting cell phones, maybe they're getting EBT cards, maybe, but for sure they're getting free plane tickets to somewhere they want to go. And so that's 300,000 people who I would bet are willing to take a job for less than somebody who's fully invested in the system, who has a house, a mortgage, a car payment, et cetera. They have a different cost structure than somebody who's just shown up and they've got a backpack and, a very much different set of expectations. So,
And the question, sorry, Chris, the question that
I don't
I
know how to interpret that one. It feels intentional and destructive potentially.
it does feel intentional. It appears ridiculously intentional. But I was thinking about this over the weekend because the immigration issue just really bothers me. And of course, it's outside the realm of the financial markets, but it's also involved in the financial markets because it's something that we have to consider the long-term impact. And the question that came to mind was, are they looking at this like, okay, labor's tight, the administration really believes that their decision making is working, like maybe they believe their own press, but and they're fudging these numbers a little bit, but they drew down the strategic petroleum reserves to try, to try to keep oil prices down to limit inflation. Are they just simply foolish enough to go to think so short term? Well, we'll bring these people into the country. That'll be more people that are willing to work. It'll keep wage inflation down, and then they're going to assimilate into the country in this wonderful, manner, and everything's going to be great. That surely they're not that short-sighted in their thought process, but their actions have been that short-sighted, for political purposes in the short run, it seems.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense on a lot of dimensions, but so we try and make sense of it, and that would
Right.
be a couple of them, right? Not least of which we saw Senator Dick Durbin, and I hesitate to use the word senator in a positive manner with this guy out of Illinois, saying that he's supporting a bill that the path to citizenship for these people would be for them to serve in the U.S. military, which is not a comforting thought to me. I think your military ought to be composed of people who are, let's say, have a strong interest in the country they're ostensibly defending.
Yes,
Beyond, apart from some idea of like, this will serve me, so I'll get some bennies on the back end.
No,
That's not a strong bond.
that's terrifying to me because there's two ways to look at it. One, I really want my military to be somebody that's grown up in our culture and from our local communities, and you know Americans, you love Americans, you're a part of the country. The second side of that is if you've gone through a rigorous application process to where you have to express your desire to be in the country because of the values that our country has, then that would be great. Come in, go through, have a period of time where you can, have your citizenship. But the problem with just these masses that are coming across the border, plugging them into the military, my concern would be at some point in the future where, we set the stage where you have the individual who's nefarious enough that decides to use the military against the American people. If you're not a part of our culture, that's a much easier decision for you to make than it is if you're a part of our culture, you're a neighbor, right? Like they could take somebody from Georgia and put them in California or vice versa. But still, it's the similar culture across the country. That was a bad comparison there, but joking somewhat, but there's similar belief values in that still love of your country. Well, you've not been here long enough to really love the country at that point. If you're coming straight in, getting plugged in,
No, it's a
you're here for
huge
all the
concern.
benefits.
Huge concern. I'm old enough to remember that during Biden's inauguration, do you remember this? They set up razor wire and fences, and they had 20,000 guard troops that they brought in to preserve the, I don't know what. That, I mean, it was the most awkward third world, like dystopian sort of imagery that I'd ever seen. And then we found out after the fact that the inauguration itself, they had these tight shots and it showed all these people and the hand on the Bible. But when they widened it out, there was a crew shooting from a half mile away. There were like 300 people at this thing, you
So
know?
they kept everybody out. That was that I did not understand that, and that was just like, are you trying to plant an image? Or do you really
Set a
believe
precedent.
we're going to start a precedent? Yeah, a precedent. Yeah. I didn't think about setting a precedent, but it does to an extent, doesn't it? It'll be interesting to see, in the next election outcome, whether that same scenario unfolds.
Well, I would put large money down with odds stacked against me, that this next election is going to be a bit of a chaotic horror show.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because from your own state of Georgia, you had submitted to your own district court down there a document, 93 pages, showing the security vulnerabilities that exist within the machines. And your state election commission looked at that and said, oh, yeah, they're pretty bad, but we don't think we have time to do anything about it. So we're going to not do anything until after the next election. Right? That's like saying, hey, Paul, your steering wheel's loose on your car. And you're like, yeah, but I'm just about to take a trip. There's really not time to deal with that. I'll take care of that after, I drive the Continental Divide
Right. You're
Worked this
going
out
through the
for
Rockies on a Beartooth Pass, and all of a sudden it breaks. You don't get that second chance.
Exactly. It's just, it was like, again, it's all this mysterious stuff. So again, but the reason I go down all these paths is I think people need to consider this stuff because, investing is always hard. It's always hard because they set it up so you have to play the game, right? There's like, wouldn't it be great if you could say, you know what? I'm going to keep my money in this vehicle over here, which isn't subject to inflation. So I know that if I save a dollar or this new this equivalent, that in 30 years when I need it, it has the same purchasing power. So that's one thing. But they're like, no, you got to play. You got to play the game. We're going to create inflation. So by definition, we're going to take, by our own rule set, half your money every 35 years. So if you have a 35-year time horizon, you're going to have to double your money just to stay even. Okay, that's the floor, and now you got to play the game and all of that. So they set the game up that you have to play. There's no way to avoid it, because if you could avoid it, people would, and their game would break. So given all of that, I think we have to understand how the game is structured, who the architects of the game are, what they're trying to go after. That's sort of the education. That's great. I do that. But then you have the harder job, which is like, all right, given all that, what do we do?
And that's one of the things that we really had to change our mindset and our strategy in the 2015, 2016 timeframe, because it's like, okay, this shouldn't be happening, but it is. How can our leaders be this foolish? Because you know where this is going to end up. You don't know how much runway is left, right? We know where the inevitable conclusion is headed to. You just don't know if it's 24 months from now, 10 years from now, it's coming. The longer it takes, the more grace it gives us of those who are courageous enough to see the truth, because it gives us time to prepare. So that is grace, the longer it's held on. I just don't know how much longer this can continue to go. But the conclusion we came to was, look, we have to accept the reality of the situation, that we need to play the game by the rules that are forced upon us, and stop spending our time and energy, stressed about how unfair the rules are. Now, don't get me wrong, I spend a lot of time reaching out to congressmen and politicians to try to get the rules back the way that they need to be. But until they change, we have to play the games that's forced upon us. So basically what we did was we said, okay, we know these tools are high percentage probability of having us in the right position, but we have to be able to trust them, and we have to operate in a manner to where I have confidence that they're going to be able to let us participate, but also help us to get out. And what risk reward do we have to balance out? So what we were able to do was, okay, if this happens, let's reduce our risk by dollar cost averaging in quickly, maybe adding pullbacks if we have to play offense. And I mean it when I say this, Chris. The first time we did it, it's like the investment committee sat down and we started arguing, and I'm like, oh my goodness, is this is can they actually kick this can down the road a little longer? And you go off the back porch and you This is graphic, but you puke and you go do it anyway, because it makes you sick to your stomach to have to play that game. But you tighten up your stops and your exit points. So yeah, you generate a few more transactions, but it's the only way that you can stay in the game long enough and protect yourself against inflation and still be in a position to survive whenever the inevitable outcome, arrives. And I
Well,
think you
this
did
is
it.
where,
No, go ahead.
sorry, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, and you did a wonderful job in your Happy New Year
Oh, yeah.
presentation, because one of the things that you mentioned in there was, we're not guaranteed that this is going to be hyperinflationary. Now, I'm with you. I believe that they would much rather it be hyperinflationary than deflationary, because if we have this deflationary collapse like occurred during 1929, a little bit different monetary system, but if we have that, then what's going to happen is the political party that's in power is not going to have power for any time. Every politician is going to be put out. Every major CEO is going to be put out. And I think if we had that type of collapse that was that severe as the Great Depression, the American people would demand justice, and you would see people go to jail, unlike the 2008 crisis. The problem with deflation is they completely lose their position of power, and it allows those that are prepared and wise to step up, build, rebuild the pieces of our country with prudence and wisdom and courageous individuals. And that leads to the great times that we had in the 1950s and 1960s. You know, some of the best standard of living in the United States was during that period of time. So we're not guaranteed that that doesn't occur. It is possible. Now, my thesis has been we're going to have a deflationary impulse, and then they're going to open up the, you know, they're going to panic print. They're going to, oh, here's, you know, what's it called? The monthly income where they send it out. I can't remember, the universal basic income, right? And they'll send it out because money will solve all our problems. And then we have that currency crisis because we've already upset the rest of the world, where that may be the straw that causes them to walk away from the dollar completely, but it's not going to be without pain to them. So I do think we're going to end up, you know, on the severe inflationary side, but it is prudent to buy some insurance for us as individuals against that deflation, because quite frankly, in the management standpoint, that's the best thing that can happen to those of us that are preparing and pursuing the path of wisdom, because deflation is a lot easier to protect yourself from than hyperinflation.
So back to this chart real quick. So that's the debt on the top. That's GDP, their income on the bottom. This is the path. That little wiggle you see right there and towards the center, that almost destroyed the whole system, right? So credit's got to keep expanding. So here's the important point. People need to understand this. This is why the framing is important. The Federal Reserve is neither a reserve nor federal. It's a private cartel. And it's been issued a very, very important function, which Congress abdicated the right to print money. And so they should be managing that relatively well. Now, they're very secretive about it. They won't allow themselves to be audited. They are actually owned by a bunch of big banks. And we know how bankers operate. They're basically amoral, if not immoral, in how they approach things, because all they care about is more money for them. That
Right.
chart I just showed has one question that has to be answered, and that's very simple. Who's going to eat the losses? Guess what? The people who make the rules don't want it to be them, right? The people who ostensibly lead us, who don't actually make the rules, but they take the money from the people who make the rules, they don't want it to be them. Nobody wants to be the person to take the losses. But this is why it's just so easy to understand for me, because these are just humans.
Right.
Here's what's going to happen. Somebody has to eat the losses, and one more time, they're going to try and make sure that the answer is not them. And that leaves everybody else. And so the issue I have is that this time the losses are so comprehensive that, kind of like 1929, but on steroids, because this, you know, as bad as 1929 was, 25% of people were out of work,
Yeah.
75% were not out of work, right?
Correct.
That, you know, it was bad. This time, you know, the way I see this coming, Paul, I can't see how this doesn't basically take the 90% and effectively marginalize, sideline them. Now, here's the thing. These people who are in power, they act more like raccoons than a really smart animal, right? They're raccoons,
Sorry.
and they haven't,
It's
you
not
know,
funny. That's a great analogy.
they're going to come into the hen house and kill every hen, right? And not thinking through that, well, what do I do next week, right? So I think in this story, or maybe it's the parable of, you know, the golden goose, right? They're going to seize all the wealth for themselves, not them. They didn't take the losses, not understanding that that wealth has no value outside of the construct of all of these people doing the real hard work, which we talked about earlier, right? So that's the, I think these people are too clever by half. They know how to seize stuff. They don't actually know where value and productivity and prosperity come from,
Right.
and that they're risking the whole show, the whole prosperity show. You know, and so that's my concern for where we're going in this story. That's what I'm looking at for 2024, 25, 26, 27, these next set of years. Like you, it's a grace every day we have in this story. I hope that this takes as long as possible to resolve. But I'm relatively convinced at this point there is no safe path through this, because to get a safe path, you would have to elect people who were able, willing, and ready to say things that Washington, D.C. has no interest in hearing. Not the people. I think you could level up with the people. You could Ross Perot this, you know, watching people react to RFK or Vivek. You know, people react great to the truth. They're like,
They do.
yeah, you know,
Yeah.
But DC doesn't want any part of that. The power structure, the media, DC, Wall Street, the three-letter agencies, they have no interest in any of that reality sort of coming forward. So we won't get it
No.
until something breaks. So I think that's what I feel, and maybe I'm wrong, but I'm not confused. I feel us careening towards a break point. And I don't know how far that out that is, but I want everybody to be as prepared as they possibly can, and having financial preparation and buffers is really important in this story, as are other sources of preparation,
That
being,
is.
yeah, making your house as secure as it can be so you're not subject to the vagaries of energy pricing if that goes wonky, et cetera, things like that.
Well, and that preparation and the analysis, it kind of reminds me of a conversation I had with one individual, and I said, okay, they're like, what about paying the house off, right? So we did the analysis, and I said, okay, you have enough funds to where you can pull this out and you can pay the house off, but you got to look at this from a couple of scenarios. If we have hyperinflation, the shrewd thing to do is tie your money up at 3.5%, buy treasuries in the interim period, and just take the interest and pay that money off. But what if we don't have hyperinflation, right? So going back to that UN Agenda 2030, where they stated, oh, you'll own nothing and you'll be happy. And then we go back to Thomas Jefferson's quote, because he gave us a warning. And I think people forget that our country was started because good and strong men and women gave up their lives to leave and go do something better, because the pain of changing was easier than the pain of staying the same, and they wanted a better future for their children. So he was speaking from experience when he stated, Thomas Jefferson gave us a major warning. He said, if the American people ever allow private banks to control the issue of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all property until their children wake up homeless in the continent that their fathers conquered. Well, isn't that exactly what they're saying, 2030? So what if that's a deflationary event? Because we go back to 2008. During that deflationary event, Chris, they wiped out the small banks. And the small banks, and I don't know about your community, but in our community, the small banks were an essential component to the growth of our local community here in North Georgia. And not only was it essential, but you had a tremendous amount of the local wealth that was invested into those local banks. Well, instead of the government stepping in and saying, okay, we've had poor management here, this bank needs to be taken down, we're going to remove that board, and we'll let the shareholders step in, or we'll let the individuals in the community step in and buy this out. No, they didn't do that. What they did was they took that bank down, and then they handed it over with taxpayer guarantees to former regulators. At least in our area, there were former regulators that came in and started a bank, and then they bought it with essentially no risk. So, when you go back to that house and the conversation I had with the individual, it's like, okay, you can do this and it's shrewd, but it's not the most prudent decision to make, right? If you can afford to pay that house off, put it into a trust. Now, guess what? If we have hyperinflation, it frees you up to reinvest the other parts of your assets a little bit more aggressively and a little bit more appropriately to protect yourself. And yeah, maybe you didn't make however much money off of leveraging, the arbitrage between keeping that note, but you're still okay. On the other hand, what if we have deflation, right? Yeah, and we manage your assets, we sidestep the market decline, and your assets do good over here, but now you're upside down your house and you lose your primary residence. You lose that house that you prepared that soil in the backyard, you have that safe room or whatever it is that you've put in. Is that an outcome that you can accept? When you have those conversations with people, instead of telling them exactly what to do, just kind of painting out the different paths that they can make, which is what our job is, most people are saying, yeah, let's work on getting that house paid for, and let's diversify a little bit here so that if we have a deflationary collapse, we're protected. And if we have an inflationary outburst, this is what we'll do over here. The worst scenario, quite frankly, Chris, would be deflation for about like a deflationary collapse that lasts for 4 or 5 years, and then a collapse of our currency with hyperinflation on the other side. The best we could hope for is a, 12 to 15 month deflationary event, and then inflation takes off on the other side. Because if you had that deflationary collapse for 4 or 5 years, most people are going to use up their resources if they're not prepared, you know, that they don't have resources to protect themselves by the time the inflation takes off.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a great summary. At the end of the day, you know, the Federal Reserve is a private cartel and it has a single product and it's called the US dollar. When push comes to shove, let's imagine we get into this state where it's either, what do we do? Do we defend the middle class or do we defend the dollar? They'll defend the dollar.
Oh, yeah.
They have no interest in defending the middle class, but the dollar, they got some interest in that, right? A lot of interest. So what would that mean? Well, let's imagine that, you know, Martin Armstrong makes a great point. He says that hyperinflation, that doesn't happen because you print too much money. That happens when people lose faith in the money. So could hyperinflation happen right now? Absolutely. If all the people out there who are holding trillions and trillions of US dollars had the same point of view I did tonight, there would be hyperinflation because they'd go, I don't want these things. Right? If you understand that you're holding a 30-year US Treasury bond, if you understand where we're likely to be in 30 years, you would not hold that bond. Right? You would say,
No, there's no way.
I'm not holding this at 3.6% for 30 years. Are you crazy? That's a guaranteed loss-making machine. So you sell the bond, now you have the dollars. What do you do with those? Right? And on, right? And hyperinflation happens when people lose faith in the currency. That's when it happens. So what could cause that loss of faith in the currency? Well, we could pick a lot of things on the screen now, not least of which is the inability of people in power to make the right decisions to begin to take some steam out of that kettle, right? Everything they're doing, like I don't know if you saw, but Zero Hedge just put out a chart. We hit $34 trillion in debt, but they did a great job summarizing that last trillion came in like 5 months, right? And
Three.
we're up
Three.
3 months, right? And that we're up like whatever it was, 4 or 5 trillion in the past, you know, 4 or 5 years. It's just like this astonishing thing. This is explosion. And everybody's just like going, oh, this is fine, you know? But it's not fine.
Well, and we go back to that, like we don't have to be accelerating our debt at that level. It's being done to prop up the underlying economic environment to make the numbers look good for the upcoming election this fall. There's no other reason to do this, right? Like literally we're giving up. In 1 trillion seconds, I looked up the data yesterday, 1 trillion seconds. Oh, I can't remember exactly. This is approximate. It's like 31,591 years. It's a little over 31,000 years or 33,000 years, somewhere
It's
in that
about right.
range.
Yep. Yeah.
That puts into perspective just how much money was debt was consumed for short-term reasons, for plastic face reasons, for deceptive reasons. For political purposes, that's no love for the American people whatsoever. That's love of self. And, you know, like Jordan Peterson made the comment that weak men are the most dangerous men because they'll destroy the whole world to make themselves look good. It's absolutely
Indeed.
astonishing.
Indeed. Who was I think was it Luke Gromen? I might be misquoting this, but he said we basically have wartime spending during a peacetime economy. Like there's no emergency right now. Allegedly, we have plus 4.5% growth in this fourth quarter, and they're spending as if we're in the depths of a great recession. So there will be a recession coming. Then what happens? Well, again, weak men, weak women, they'll be making weak decisions and they'll just keep doing that until it breaks on them. And that's the part we all have to sort of peer into and try and understand for ourselves, what does breaking look like, you know, and how are we going to position ourselves? I wish we weren't having to make those decisions. I wish it was different, but it is what it is, you know, here we are.
It is what it is, and when we can see the truth, we can make much more prudent, much more wise decisions than if we're, you know, trying to close our eyes and ignore the situation. At least we have the courage to fight our way through this. And at some point in the future, it's going to be easier. But we have to fight for prudence and wisdom now so that us and our families and our communities can be better on the other side of this. Because, you know, when the calamity comes, I think it's, what is it, the Chinese proverb for, or Chinese word, the symbol for crisis is opportunity and danger. I'm butchering that. I don't remember that. But the point being is there's a Chinese character and word for crisis or something like that, that's opportunity and danger. So yeah, we have danger ahead of us, but we also have opportunity if we're courageous enough to see the truth and seek the truth and embrace the courage enough to follow the truth wherever it takes us.
Well, I know that to round this out and bring it in home, Evie and I are busy just doing what we can on our homestead. We're really interested in improving our soil. We've got a whole new flock of chickens who should start laying soon. We had to
Oh, nice.
retire our old flock. Very sad, but it has to happen. Welcome to real life. Our garden got put away strong this year because we had Dane here helping, and he just mulched every bed, and it's really coming in good. But that's where I get my solace in this story, is knowing that my primary, if I have to, my water is uninterruptible because we got rivers on both sides and a spring, so we're water blessed, and we got our food systems are coming up the curve, and going forward, we're just going to build community around that, because I do think that those basic things are going to be required for a period of time. Very helpful. But the more I learn about the FDA and the USDA and the CDC, they've been feeding us garbage and poisoning our food over time, which we could see in the overall obesity statistics for the United States and our metabolic disorders compared to other countries. We're clearly that's a food issue on some level, as well as a cultural issue. But I now, Paul, when I go to the grocery store, the whole center just looks like poison to me. I mean, I'll still eat out of it from time to time. I do like my chips and things, but increasingly I'm like, I don't know about that, and it's just whatever's going on, the whole thing is just due for a repair session.
Is. It really
So
is. It really is. So, but the good thing is, you're doing a wonderful job. There are people that are listening. You've got an incredible tribe that spread across this country that are diligently, I believe, and lovingly communicating those around them. And I did a local television interview. I do it here locally about once a month. It's a small local station, but the co-host reminded me yesterday, 7 years ago, that I said the American people have not had enough yet, right? When the pain of changing is easier than the pain of staying the same, that they will change. But I think that people are starting to open their eyes. They're not willing to change yet, but they're feeling the pain and they're starting to look up for other areas. So each of what you're doing to the people you're educating are seeds that are being planted across this country and helping point people in a better path, helping them point them in how to manage. What our part of this is to help them manage their resources prudently and develop a strategy to help navigate the chaos that's coming down the road. So, the future, I think, is there's a lot of trouble on the horizon, but it's bright because of the hard work that you've put in and the individuals that embrace the courage enough to get out there and make a difference in the lives of those around them or attempt to it. So thank you for what you do, Chris.
Well, thank you. And to me, it's a sacred responsibility. And I'm glad that there are people who are heeding the call and doing the same thing, which is I'm not preparing for me and Evie. I'm preparing for people I don't even know. Right. And
Right.
that's my job and my duty because I can see it coming. But more people are waking up to this idea that, and we'll close on this, which is that we're at that stage now where a failure to plan is a plan to fail.
Oh, well said. Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
No decision is a decision. Like we're at that part of the story now. So thank you for helping people make their plans. It's vitally important, obviously. Making financial plans is critical, but I think we all need good plans now, like honest plans. And our plans may not survive first contact with the enemy. Hey, it happens. But no plan is worse than having some sort of plan. So
Right.
thanks for what you're doing.
It's my honor. It's my honor. So thank you for it's an honor to be a part of the tribe. It's an honor to meet every person that I meet. And my job is to help people. And if I can help
Yep.
people, then that's doing my part.
Well, great feedback so far. And I expect that's just obviously going to continue. So thanks for that. Thanks everybody for listening. We'll be back next time again. This is Paul Kiker of Kiker Wealth Management, and I'm Chris Martinson of Peak Financial Investing and also Peak Prosperity. So come on by if you need some and you would like to have a plan, talk to Paul, go to peakfinancialinvesting.com. and fill out a simple form, and they will get back to you as soon as they possibly can. And I know you're busy now because you've had quite a bit of activity on that front, but for anybody who wants to come in, you'll help them.
Yes, we'll get to them. We sure will. Be an honor.
All right. Till next time. Bye, everyone. Hello, Chris Martinson. I'm the CEO of Peak Prosperity and also Peak Financial Investing. And after watching that, you're probably wondering, well, what do I do with my money? Look, you both deserve and need somebody who can talk to you about what's really going on in this world, understand the situation as it is, not be steering you towards certain things that don't make sense for you or just keep you in a game that's already ended. Look, if you want to talk to somebody about the petrodollar declining or what is happening with gold or which sectors are actually the best ones to be in, given what the Federal Reserve is up to or the federal government, you deserve to talk to somebody who can answer those and has a few gray hairs and has been there through some of the economic cycles because, hey, we're in another economic cycle. So it's good to have that experience. Fortunately, at Peak Financial Investing, what we do is we go out and we scour and we look for the very best firms out there who satisfy one thing above all else. They've got great experience coupled to great customer service. So if you want to come by peakfinancialinvesting.com, there's a very simple form you can fill out. Just a few fields. You hit send. What happens is an email gets triggered out. It goes to an endorsed firm of ours. You will get an email back. You can then set up a phone call for a 30 to 45 minute free, no obligation, no pressure call to find out if this firm is a good fit for you and to find out if you're a good fit for the firm. It has to go both ways. And if all that matches up, this will be one of the best things that could happen to you this year. So please come by peakfinancialinvesting.com. Very simple process. We would love to help you if we can. Thanks very much.